This episode of the Infamous Podcast is brought to you by the Flying Pork Apparel Company.
The Flying Pork Apparel Company is an awfully long name to fit into a 15-second ad. We're most likely going to have to cut it short, but our designer tees and customer services are like way long on quality. Visit flyingporkapparel.com and shirt yourself, folks. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is Brian.
I'm Daryl.
And this week, Daryl, we're going to tell everybody what they should be streaming during quarantine.
Quarantine and stream.
Actually, we're not going to tell you what to do. We're going to give you suggestions because I think the fact that we're all being told to stay home, I don't want to be told anything else. So,
yeah.
But before we get started, we have some news bites this week. So the very first one you brought to my attention is Tom Holland might be in Venom 2.
Yeah, that was one of those things that I saw on a video, just kind of like going through YouTube. And, you know, a lot of those things are just kind of try to get the headlines or, you know, get your attention so you can click on it. But actually, it looks like this is a case.
Yeah.
I think Tom Holland.
I think that was part of the agreement to bring, like, to keep Spidey in the fold of the MCU.
Right.
Is that he would show up in the god-awful Venomverse. Venom wasn't that bad. I think I told you I finally watched it.
Yeah. So. And again, it's one of those movies that you can tell in better hands, it would have been a lot better.
Yeah. Like the Joker.
I love Tom Hardy in it, and I love his relationship with Venom, which that's the thing that you had to have a good Tom, Tom Hardy had to be good in his role.
Yeah.
As Eddie Brock and mm-hmm. the Venom symbiote. Now, again, I had issues with it being PG-13 because there were some definitive action sequences where you could tell.
Yeah.
But
I really wasn't that shocked by the PG-13. Right. It didn't bother me as much as I thought it would. I think what bothered me is just another just weird accent from Tom Hardy. Just let him talk in his regular voice. Like I think one of the most fun Tom Hardy performances was the one with Chris Pine and Reese Witherspoon, Love and War. I think is what it was called.
This Means War.
This Means War. Thank you.
I love that movie.
It's a great bad movie, and he's awesome in it, and he gets to just be Tom. Like he's not Tom Hardy, but he gets to speak like Tom Hardy, and like let's get more of that. You know, it worked in Mad Max because he could just be gruff, and he doesn't say much, and that was it. He just gave menacing looks to everybody, but yeah, I don't know. It's not like he's.
Yeah, I think
like,
he grunted. I think he might have grunted more in Mad Max than Henry Cavill did in The Witcher series.
Maybe, yeah. So, and it wasn't like he was like, "You've but adopted quarantine. I was born into it."
I love his accent and his bang.
You do? Ew.
Yeah.
Gross. Anyway, I think this is cool. Like Tom Holland is a great little actor. He's a lot of fun. I think more Tom Holland Spider-Man is never a bad thing. I think it'll help add some validity to the Venom franchise. I guess that means we might get Venom in an MCU movie proper. Who knows? But I don't know. It kind of gives me a little bit of hope for Morbius as well.
Yeah, and I know it's a trailer, but I really enjoyed the first trailer for Morbius. Trailers don't tell you a lot, but just by how things are set up, I do have some faith in it. Although, again, going about the MCU thing, seeing Michael Keaton just in that bit role,
oh yeah,
actually buffed up my hopes for the movie as well.
So. Yeah, I don't know. It's cool. I'm kind of excited to see it. And then in the next bit of news, the Dark Horse Comics is kind of getting in on the Twitch action. They launched a Twitch channel that is streaming Legends of Korra live readings. So I don't know if you've read any. Well, you probably haven't read any of the Avatar or Legend of Korra graphic novels.
No,
but they were done by Brian and Mike, the guys who did the series and everything. They don't write them. Well, I think Brian writes them, but different artists and things like that. But it's a lot of fun. But so they've done so far on the Twitch channel, they've done the live reading of Legend of Korra Turf Wars Part 1, and usually the stories are three parts, using actual, you know, people from the shows. And so I think that's really cool. I like that they're doing that. It's a good way to get kids to have something to watch that's a little more wholesome. It's something that could hopefully get kids to be excited to come into the comic book store and pick these up or order them from Amazon, who knows. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was a really cool thing. And you've got Janet Varney coming back as Korra. And you have, I never know how to say her first name, Sichelle Gabriel coming back as Asami, which, again, I think it's really cool that they got a couple of characters, or, you know, they got the two of the main actors from the show to show up and you know, continue the run.
I think that's a really cool, especially even with everybody stuck at home, what's going on, and to do something like this. I like that type of thinking outside the box.
Well, I think Dark Horse is really kind of known for that, you know, like just right. kind of coming at it from another angle. It's why they're like, you know, number four, but still they're a really great publishing house. They do really interesting things and yeah, so I think it's cool and I'm excited.
And you're a huge Legend of Korra fan.
I am a huge Legend of Korra fan, and I will definitely be trying to remember my Skype password.
You know what?
So or not my Skype, my Twitch password, so I can go watch.
Yeah, and I keep telling you this, but one of these days I'm going to watch Legend of Korra.
You keep saying that, but like I don't believe you. Like you keep saying you're going to finish Rebels.
Yeah, I haven't watched Rebels in about a week
since we talked about it. I bet.
Right, anyway. And it was funny because the other day when I ended up watching three episodes of The Office, which yeah, I haven't watched that in a while. I was thinking about watching Rebels because I wanted something bite-sized. And again, I watched an hour of The Office instead, mm-hmm. 20 minutes. But so, yeah, I'm a bad Star Wars guy.
Yeah, I get it. You're just a bad guy. all right. So next up, I just thought this was interesting because it kind of goes into what we were talking about last week is Dave Bautista's new My Spy, little action kid movie in the vein of Spy Kids. Has decided to skip the theater and has been acquired by Amazon and will go straight to streaming in the middle of April.
Okay. So that I think part of that is because what was the movie with him and the Eternals guy that looks like Chris Hemsworth now with
Camille Nanjiani. Stuber.
Stuber, yeah.
Stuber is actually a very fun movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It looked pretty bad.
So I watched like half of it on a plane when I was doing my whole world tour, and I came home and it was on iTunes and it was $6.99 and I just bought it.
See, this one actually, again, it kind of reminds me of, you know, The Rock with the Tooth Fairy or Game sure. Plan and Vin Diesel with the pacifier. So
dude, it's a big, do not talk bad about the pacifier. That is Vin Diesel's absolute best movie.
Even better than Boiler Room?
Yeah. If you if someone's like, you can only watch one Vin Diesel movie for the rest of your life, it's The Pacifier.
I'd have to watch Pitch Black.
No, it's The Pacifier.
One of the movies in there. Yeah, no.
You spelled The Pacifier wrong. Anyway. No, but, I mean, no, yeah, I get
to
it,
your so. Point, I do like this. And we talked about a little about this last week, you know, with everything going on, how some of these smaller movies, these movies that aren't made for a lot and probably aren't going to make a lot at the box office, mm-hmm. what type of fate they would have, especially over the next few months.
Right.
Down the line, this might be a little bit different and go back to normal, even though I don't
Well, I mean, if this is going to go all the way through, like, so right now, like, my daughter's school doesn't start back until May 1st, right? So that's only, you know, 3.5 weeks away. But that being said, like, that's 3.5 more weeks of movies not making any money. And
yes, I
need to correct myself here. They don't have a release date for when it's going to show up on Netflix. It was supposed to release in the theaters April 17th. But Amazon Prime will announce a date soon. But this is actually the second movie that was originally scheduled for a theatrical release in April to instead go straight to streaming because Paramount bought the rights or sold the rights to The Lovebirds to Netflix at the very end of March. So,
oh, okay. I didn't know that one.
Yeah, we talked about this. I think we're going to see a lot more of this. I think I'm waiting to see like that big blockbuster be like, "You know what? We're not going to wait till November. We're going to either release it to buy or we're going to put it on, you know, like in the case of say Black Widow. We're going to put it on Disney streaming and you know, you have to buy Disney streaming if you want to watch it. You have to buy Disney. Yeah. You got to get the plus if you want to watch
the plus.
It. The plus.
And another movie I'm waiting on is, I meant to say this last week, it's the Khabib Tony Ferguson of movies, and that's New Mutants.
Yeah, at this point, they should just release it. Like, yeah. It's been too much. Just put it on Hulu because I think it's rated R. And yeah, just put it on Hulu. Let me watch it. Let me see if it lives up to what I think the New Mutants are. I mean, Warlock is looking at me right now. but yeah, it's just enough is enough. Just. Yeah. Put the goddamn movie out.
And for those of you all not versed in UFC, Khabib Nurmagomedov, which is the 155 champ, and Tony Ferguson, they've had five fights that they've supposed to have fought five times, and all five have been canceled for various reasons, being sick, being injured. Now Khabib can't get out of Russia. So it's, again, New Mutants is one of those movies that's been supposed to have been released, what, three times, and was supposed to come out originally, wasn't it 2018?
No, it was 20, it was before that. And you know, like Maisie Williams, like when she shot the movie, it was before Game of Thrones ended, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah,
like,
so it's
gonna be really weird for people to like jump back and see her like 5 years younger when it finally comes out.
So yeah, just release it,
yeah,
people.
Please. All right, and then the last little bit. Because, like I said, I can't pass up a shot at burying The Last Jedi. Apparently, some people from the editorial group felt that The Last Jedi tried to undo the storytelling of The Force Awakens. So, how do you feel about that, Daryl?
Again, I've said my piece about this whole trilogy. It was screwed from the start when you don't have a game plan. Again, it didn't have to be J.J. Abrams. As much you don't like The Last Jedi, even if it was Rian Johnson, which I know you broke out in hives when I said that, even if it was Rian Johnson planning the whole trilogy, whoever it was, you have one unified voice planning this trilogy, and then you can have different directors. Like the original, you had George Lucas behind everything, even though you had different writers, but George Lucas kept that focus.
Yeah.
Last Jedi, even though I like parts of it, you can see that the focus was completely gone from The Force Awakens.
I'm gonna have a hot take here. Mm-hmm. The prequel trilogy was the most thought out storytelling in Star Wars.
I actually think so. I honestly do. It's the execution was bad because George Lucas was at the helm.
Yeah.
And just like certain position coaches can't be head coaches, George Lucas is just not a, like, he, you know, he couldn't direct like that.
Like Irving Kirshner directed the second movie and it's Empire Strikes Back, and it's amazing. It's the best movie of the entire saga series.
Absolutely.
Forget saga.
100%.
You know, Gareth Edwards directed Rogue One, second best movie of the entire series. Then you get Star Wars, then you get Revenge of the Sith. You know, I mean, that rounds out a pretty solid top five of storytelling right there. But yeah, no, I think part of the problem is I remember reading somewhere, and I'll have to track this down, that they gave Rian Johnson like a treatment of where the characters needed to be by the end of his movie, and he threw it away and wrote his own script. See, he was the only writer on his script, on his screenplay, on his story.
My question is, so he is to blame, but those like Kathleen Kennedy who allowed him to do that, to, as you know, as this editor said, like, he undo the story, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, where a hotshot guy comes in or comes in and they want to make things in their own image for no reason but to put their name on it. And right. It's an ego thing.
And, you know, he's a guy who has repeatedly said, I make movies to make half the people upset. That is his whole mantra. And, you know, that is not the type of person that you need. But here, like in here, when they're talking about it, you know, when they say The Last Jedi trying to undo the story, he says, you know, it's very strange to have a second film so consciously undo the storytelling of the first one. I'm sorry, but that's the way I felt. I don't even feel that it's true about the third film. It took where the second film ended and it tried to tell a story. It didn't feel like it was consciously, it just didn't feel that way to me, is what the editor is saying here. But yeah, like, I've been having some conversations with a buddy of mine who finally saw Rise of Skywalker, and Rise of Skywalker, what they should have done is gone back and said, this is episode 8.5 or 9.1, and Harry Pottered the shit out of it and done a fourth movie.
100%, absolutely. That was the first thing I saw, like, when I got done watching it. I enjoyed the hell out of that, despite its issues. Again, a lot of the issues it had, mm-hmm. you know, it was because it was cleaning up a mess. And again, I'm one of those that I don't like Last Jedi, but I don't hate it. Like,
there's parts of it I really enjoyed, and there's parts of it really hated. I will say this. I think what they could have done with the story that they ended up with is split it into two. You have, you know, Palpatine have his broadcast or whatever go out at the in the middle of the first movie. You know, that's not the cliffhanger you end on. And you have, you know, Poe really ramp up rebuilding the resistance. You don't have Leia in there at all. You use Mark Hamill as a Force ghost training Rey, like Obi-Wan and Yoda did before. And the movie ends and you see that Sith fleet.
That would have been awesome.
Like, you just, like, it just kind of, you go to Exegol, you follow Ben to Exegol, and, you know, and then the whole second movie can be the redemption of Ben Solo, which is something I didn't think I wanted, but I really enjoyed in the snapshot of it that we got.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah to your, yeah, return, Rise of Skywalker absolutely should have been two films.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't do that. I don't know. I think that part of the issue is there are toxic fans out there. Not absolutely disagreeing with that at all. And, you know, there are toxic forces within Star Wars. And I'm not going to sit here and call for the ouster of Kathleen Kennedy, right? Financially, she has nothing but winners on her hand. But from the story point of view, I think if somebody's got to go, it's the current story group. Because there's no way any of this should fly and get past them. And if it is, they're just rubber stamping things because they're too busy on Twitter fighting with people.
I see that a lot, like, in some of the stuff I look at.
I mean, I had to unfollow Pablo Hidalgo. I just can't deal with the fact that he doesn't, like, and, you know, he's allowed to tweet about whatever he wants to tweet about.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But, like, I don't have to follow it, and, like, I followed him before because when Clone Wars and Rebels were going strong, like, that was the place to go to kind of get the cool inside scoop. But I don't want to follow people who are complaining about Trump or Biden or Bernie, like, or any of that stuff, right? Just, you know, that's fine. And that it's his Twitter account. He can do what he wants to do. My job was to not follow it. Plain and simple.
Right. And this is the thing. I don't follow people like that. Well, you know, I don't follow Twitter anyway, but I don't listen to people like that or in any of the entertainment field for their political views. I listen to them for, you know, their creative side, all the stuff that they can do.
For the
all
things the, they specialize they have, in.
Yeah, the skills they have, you know, the wonderful skills they have, whether it's writing a story, whether it's acting, singing, dancing, what have you.
Yeah.
I don't need to hear your political opinion. Nope. I don't. And again, that's not to say that they shouldn't have one.
They're more than welcome to it. And, you know.
But I just choose not to listen to
you. You could argue
not to follow you for that.
You could argue that we shouldn't have an opinion on this because, you know, we don't write it. But, you know, I feel like we create something every week by putting out a podcast. Like we're putting our voice out there just like they do. So just not as on a grand scale. Anyway,
not yet.
But speaking of solid storytelling, this is a perfect segue into The Mother of Exiles, Westworld Season 3, Episode 4.
Man, and this one, like I said, from last week's episode, last week's was my favorite episode of Westworld so far, and this one was just a perfect follow-up, for me. What, I mean, we finally got the Man in Black, a.k.a. William. He's been out absent all season, and it was good how they started it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
In the sense of kind of like following, because it's been so long since I've watched season two, remembering what happened to him or what he did actually.
Oh yeah,
and that was a huge part of this episode. You know, about him, the choices versus control, and that's something, you know, we'll dig deeper into as far as the philosophy of the show, you know, as we go on. But you know, watching him. Just pretty much ruined from a mental standpoint. He's just like in a bad place. And then Charlotte comes and says, "Hey, we need you." Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he cleans up like that and he's ready to go.
Yeah.
But obviously it's not as cut and dry as he would like to think it is.
Well, and that's the beauty, because the tagline for this week is "The truth doesn't always set you free." And, you know, he's going around, and we'll get to the rest of the stuff, but he's talking to Emily and he's losing his mind, or thinks he's losing his mind. He's getting ready to cut into his arm again, which, you know, I love this ongoing thing where he's always getting ready to cut into his arm to see if there's a port.
Right.
But he never does, because Charlotte, and we'll get to who Charlotte is, as well, like, stops him. And like you're saying, she's like, "Hey dude, You gotta come save your company, you know, cowboy up. Let's get this done." and yeah, it was super, super cool. I think I love the way Tessa Thompson played this week. She took the menace she had from killing the pedo last episode and like dialed it to 11, because she got to reveal some things.
Right. And it was that subtlety of her performance where and again, it's one of those things. This is one of those episodes that's great to watch a second time after finding out the big reveal at the end.
Oh yeah.
Because you just watching some of the performances, you pick up on things, especially if you've watched the show for, you know, this long, for three seasons, and we'll get to that. But I loved her. Just, there was the steeliness to her, and then, like you said, that menace and that malevolence in how she kind of like left things.
Oh yeah. So, yeah, okay, we got to get to the big reveal. So everybody's been wondering, like, who's in who when it comes to hosts. Who's in Chibs? Who's in Charlotte? Who's in Dolores?
Masashi.
We met Masashi this week. And it was who was in Bernard. Bernard is in Bernard. And, you know, it was really cool to find out that Dolores doesn't trust anybody.
Which, you know what's funny about that? And we kind of
Well, we had talked about it. Well, we had talked about that Reddit theory about how Charlotte was a different version of Dolores, like was the Dolores Abernathy persona. Right. But no, she's straight up Dolores.
Yep, and all of them are. And
one I like of the to things call I them the Dolori.
One of the things I said is like I wasn't sure, you know, if like from a narrative standpoint, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing I find about that is, you know, Dolores not trusting anyone, Dolores wanting, needing to have total control, which again, based on her history, it's understandable. But it also, especially watching this episode, when you get a little bit more about Serac, mm-hmm. they are not that much different in how they look at stuff.
Right.
They are just two sides. They're basically two sides of this coin about, you know, human and synth. I guess you would call them synths. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that reveal, I will say I was more disappointed because of the Musashi.
Yeah.
Because I wanted him to be out there.
Sure.
Like the other ones, I didn't really care as much. I did want, you know, it was like, who is in this? It's like in Dallas, who shot JR? That's a blast from the past.
Well, I think it's because we all wanted Teddy to come back.
Yeah, that's probably a big part of it.
But he went into the Valley Beyond, man. That's like,
yeah,
that's like what the Scoobies did to Buffy in that two seasons that don't exist. There's a song about it and everything.
But Musashi is probably my biggest disappointment that it's not him and it's Dolores. But from a narrative standpoint and from a Dolores character standpoint, it makes perfect sense to me. Well,
she just needed a badass Asian character to take over the Yakuza. And
so my question
she
in
she never met him, though. I don't recall.
Yeah. I don't remember if she did or so, not. But my question in that is, did she like program herself or her copies to like as an emulation as far as the skill sets of the other hosts, like the handling of a sword, like Musashi? Which
I feel like it's like a hive mind thing, because it's not Musashi's. Okay, so here's what we have to like kind of get out of the way, because I was listening to someone being like, well, the real Dolores is gone. Of course, the real Dolores is gone. She left that version one body in the hub at Westworld.
Right.
You know, she had a new body made by Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
So she needed Bernard to be in the real world to build her that new body and program it. And I think because, you know, like, I think we need to stop thinking of her as Dolores and Wyatt. She's just Dolores. But because she has, you know, like you said, the malevolence, like she had the foresight to kind of, you know, jack into the Matrix, program what she needs, and then head out into the real to get it done.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
I was just kind of like on my second watch through, I was trying to figure that out. And again, it's not like that huge of a deal, but it's just like one of those curious things where like that sword fight brought that to mind for me.
Yeah, it was so cool. Watching Maeve again with the sword. And then, like, seeing, you know, because, again, we didn't know it was Dolores at that point.
Right.
I think the really cool thing is when Maeve came into the room, she felt the presence of another host.
Right.
But she didn't know who it was until it happened. And then she thought it was Musashi and did not realize it was Dolores until the Dolori let everybody in on the plan worldwide. So yeah, but it was so cool. The other fun thing was with Bernard and Stubbs, with the little off switch, trying to go up to Liam and be like, you know, freeze all motor functions. You know, that was great. I think Bernard is learning a lesson that you kind of have to get your ducks in a row before you act. Because had he turned fixed Stubbs, I don't know if Dolores would have stood a chance.
No, and that's a great point. You know, he is so hell bent on stopping her that he's taking the shortcuts. When it's like along the lines of, you know, taking a shortcut, getting yourself lost, and then take it taking longer for you to get to your destination than if you would have taken that extra time.
Right.
Then, you know,
I mean, think of it this way. Dolores is playing three-dimensional chess, and Bernard is playing what's the game where you drop the ball and you grab the marbles? Or Jax. He's playing Jax.
Yeah.
Right? They're not even playing the same game or on the same level of strategic mastery. I'm really hoping he learns his lesson from this week and kind of figures it out. But man, this show is beautifully shot.
Yeah. And real quick, I do have to say, I do want more of that Bernard and Stubbs show. Those guys.
Oh, the drone tour of Los Angeles. How great was that shirt? You know, I thought it was funny that he brought him beer.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. The other cool thing was in the Yakuza warehouse, the whiskey warehouse. It was that white host making liquid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was neat. Yeah,
I really like the score for the party
mm-hmm.
/ fight with yeah. Dolores and Stubbs.
The eyes wide shut party.
Yeah. But so this show is so beautifully shot.
I couldn't help thinking, oh, well, they have an eyes wide shut party, but then also this was the heist from Fast 7, and that was Michelle Rodriguez fighting Ronda Rousey.
Yes.
Except for instead of both of them falling into the party, like, you know, Michelle Rodriguez is like, there you go, Rhonda, and threw her over, but which didn't happen in the Fast 7 movie. But I kind of like had flashbacks to that in a good way. Evan Rachel Wood, like, I don't know if that was her or if it was her stunt woman and they like CG'd her face on there, but that girl's got a mean like high kick.
Yeah, that was okay.
Like when she went for the head, that was like, because she's doing it in heels, and it was flawless. I really, really, really like this. I liked when Maeve took over the automatically army aiming shotgun or guns, and was having everybody like kill each other Jedi style.
How when she was walking through the the strip.
Yeah.
And everything was just going haywire. Mm-hmm. That was, she's, you know, just testing her boundaries. Yep. And that, like, while we're talking to her, let's get back a little bit back to Ciroc.
Yeah.
And man, that guy is, again, we didn't get much about him, you know, last episode, but we got a lot more about him. And I have to say, what the hell happened in Paris? Man,
it's like, gone.
And I think we're going to get more of that this coming week. But I think that was just a driving force, because one of the things he was just talking about, he's saying, you know, the greatest threat to humanity has always been humanity.
Right.
And that's why he's doing, or he's, you know, he's built a lifetime trying to create this system or roadmap to, you know, predict human, you know, the unpredictable, which is human behavior, which, right. I mean.
Which is Dolores.
Right.
Which he's learning very quickly.
So that is, and it's just kind of funny. Just those two are, they're the same personality in the sense of what they're trying to accomplish. But control, right. And again, this is going back to what I was talking about with William: control versus, that factor of control versus choice.
Yeah,
and.
Well, does William have a choice? Did he ever have a choice? That's what he's trying to figure out.
Right. And it's not the same thing. It seems like it could be, but it's not. Like, even when things are out of your control, you still have choices you can make. Like, even if the choices suck, like the guy in the chair was young, where he saw, you know, what would happen if he cooperated to his family.
Right.
What would happen to his family if he cooperated versus what would happen if he didn't. And, you know, when people say, I have no choice. No, you always have a choice.
Right.
Now, it just.
But you don't always have control. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where William is, in the sense of, I love that last scene where, you know, he's talking to Dolores Abernathy. Well, at least the vision of her.
Well, so that was when Charlotte Dolores Charlotte stuck him. And like, yeah, and is it like a psychotropic drug? Is it like a nanite? Is it, you know, I think it was something that put Charlotte in there, or put Dolores in there, or is William a host and they brought him online?
Right.
Like,
because he asked that question, am I me?
Yeah. And she's like, now you've entered the end of the game. Welcome to the end of the maze.
And this is that question where if somebody did that, does it matter if I'm like, they've touched on this with Star Trek too a little bit. Well, yeah, with Soji in, you know, Picard, does it matter that you're not real? Like, you're not organic, you're not human, if you feel that, or I mean, that's one of those things, that one of those philosophical, you know, things like, I think therefore I am, you know, as Descartes says, is that enough? Right. Is that enough? Or is it like, what makes being human like the end all be all? And I think this is one of the things Westworld is exploring, because Dolores is as real as anyone, even mm-hmm. though if she's the host or not.
I think, you know, she's more real in a lot of ways, because she has a mission and she's sticking to it.
Right. So I just love that philosophy, and or not necessarily philosophy, but yeah, the philosophy of the show about, you know, again, the control versus choice. Because one of the things William says, he says, I am in control. I have always been in control. Have you, though?
Right. Nope. Well, I like to joke that I've never been 100% myself since I had my shoulder surgery, because I have cadaver. Uh-huh. I have a cadaver ligament in there. And like, you know, there's that like 0.999%, like, that's not me. And so right. It's like, how much control does that have over me? Like, you know, like none, but still, like, I definitely use it as an excuse for like bad behavior. You know, I walk by and smack Angel on the butt. I'm like, it was the ligament, it wasn't me.
So in that control, because I have a question for you, in the sense of how they're needing to use Liam to get control of
Rehoboam.
My question is this: is Rehoboam is it just an AI, or is it one of those things that will become, for lack of a better term, self-aware?
I think it already is self-aware, because it predicts things. I think what it is Dolores is such a chaos to its order, it doesn't know how to deal with her.
Okay, so, and that's why I keep saying divergences.
Yeah, those are the divergences. So I would say, like, Rehoboam, however you say it, is, you know, the big Rimbaldi ball, is, you know, like, chaotic, or is, you know, neutral, right? It's, you know, true neutral. And I think that's what it is. Because it's just trying to solve problems. It's not, you know, like, it solved traffic in Los Angeles. They made a big point of that. The whole Rico app is run by that, you know, that AI, regardless of people, if they've said that or not, because how else could you have stats, you know?
Have you ever heard of the book series? And that, and it's actually making me think of something else, but have you ever heard of the book series, the Scythe book series?
No.
It's by Neil Shusterman.
Okay.
Quick rundown. Basically, humanity is literally immortal now. Like, you don't die. As long as it's kind of like Altered Carbon in a way, except they don't have sleeves. However, there are scythes that were created, and there is a tally of people that they kill to, you know, just so this planet doesn't get overpopulated. That's the idea. But okay. They have an AI called the Thunderhead that is involved in almost everything except, you know, this whole size business. But the Thunderhead can do all these things. And it also knows, because that people sometimes need to rebel.
Yeah.
So they have people called unsavories, and what, you know, the Thunderhead could stop all crime, basically. Right. But it knows that some people
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the same thing. It was like in Battlestar when the Lee tried to shut down the black market, and Lampkin was like, no, dude, you need to have this. Like, this is important to commerce, because if you don't have a healthy, you know, pseudo-regulated black market, then people are cutting each other up for identity chips and credits and beer. So yeah, I don't know. Okay. I thought this was a great episode. I'm loving everything about this season. It taps into all my greatest fears about artificial intelligence and mm-hmm. our robot overlords coming to take care of you meatbags. So
yeah, it just asks that question, what does it mean to mm-hmm. truly be human?
Right.
And do you need to be that human, quote unquote? Do you have to be born? Do you have to be organic, or is it the behavior itself and not the origin, but the road you take? So
yep. All right, that's enough Westworld. Westworld for weeks,
I'm also reading Meditations by Marcus Aurelius too. So
okay, look at you.
I just love just talking about philosophical stuff.
Heck yeah, because it's
asking those questions.
It is. Yeah. All right. So the title of this week's episode, if you don't know yet, is What to Watch When Everybody Is Watching. So we put together some lists about what we think are good things to stream while you're in quarantine. We each picked a few TV series, and we each picked three movies, and then I cheated and picked a couple stand-up comedy specials. Just because I was going through this, I was like, do you ever go to your history on Netflix and look at what you've watched?
Yeah.
So I had like these two stand-up specials on there like three times. So it's like, oh yeah, I definitely need to recommend these. So yeah. All right, let's start with the TV series. I tried to pick stuff we haven't talked about on the show before, because I think some of the stuff we've just kind of talked about ad nauseum and is relatively obvious, but at the same time, like, maybe people are new to this stuff, so it's definitely worth mentioning. So why don't you go first with your first series?
So a couple.
Oh, and I will say, we had zero crossover.
Yeah, which zero.
I knew when you said I'm pretty sure we're gonna have crossover, I was like, excellent, because I've already picked all of my stuff and I know you didn't pick any of it.
Which is funny because a couple of the things on your list is actually I've actually watched and I love.
Yeah.
And I will talk about that. But so for mine, my series are Netflix, The Witcher, because mm-hmm. again, Henry Cavill, I love Henry Cavill, love the Witcher mythos because I'm a huge fan of the game.
Yep.
I'm a fan of the books, not as much as the game and not as much as the Netflix series. Sure. The Expanse, which is to me.
Oh, no. You go, then I go.
Okay.
So, but finish The Expanse and then I'll do two.
So, The Expanse is definitely my favorite sci-fi show I've ever seen. It's on Amazon Prime now.
Yep.
Four seasons. It's amazing.
It's number two to Farscape for me, but yeah.
So. And what are yours?
All right, your first. So my first one is also a Netflix series. It's called I'm Not Okay With This. It's the story of a young girl who her dad kills himself. And we don't see this. We kind of learn this through exposition. And she slowly goes through realizing she has superpowers. And kind of like the scene where when she's walking down the street and everything's fluttering with Maeve, she has a scene like that, which is pretty cool in one of the episodes. It's seven episodes. It goes really, it's a really quick watch. It's like, 32 to 24 minute episodes.
Great show. Yeah.
And it ends with an awesome cliffhanger because there's something you think that's kind of going on in the underbelly of the show. And then the cliffhanger flips everything on its head.
And also, it probably has one of the best opening lines of a show.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you
Dear Diary, fuck you.
All right, so then my next one, also from Netflix, is Sex Education with Asa Butterfield and Gillian Anderson. Season 2 just recently came out. This is a really fun coming-of-age show. Asa Butterfield is amazing in it. He's very much... that fish out of water, uncomfortable in his own skin, trying to come of age at the same time. I really debated between putting this or Atypical on there because I love Atypical so much, but we haven't talked about this one on the show before, and I think this is one. It's coming back for a third season, and it's one that people definitely should watch. Plus, it's just really funny, and it's fun to watch Gillian Anderson play somebody's mom. So
yeah. I love the first season. I wasn't as enamored with season two of Sex Education.
So I thought season two was really good because we got more flavor with the extended cast, like the swimmer.
That's one thing I did like. Yeah,
the swimmer when he broke his hand. The one girl who was, you know, essentially sexually assaulted on the bus and how she dealt with it, and you know, her story was heartbreaking, and part of it is like she's so dumb that she didn't know and she didn't have anyone to talk to, and that's what made her story so heartbreaking this season. But yeah, then when it kind of all clicked and came together and she's like, oh wait a second, then she became awesome, even more awesome than she already was. But and the actress who plays her is great. All right, so yeah, what do you got next?
The Boys. Another Amazon series. Season two, I'm not sure when, probably summer. I was hoping they would, you know, with everything going on,
it's supposed to be late spring, I think. I think it should be in the next month or so.
But, you know, The Boys is based off of a comic series, same name. And just think if the Justice League was full of assholes.
Yeah. Or even more full.
And not, it's assholes, sadists, and sociopaths. That's what The Boys is.
Criminals.
Criminals. And you have Carl. And the thing I love about The Boys is how it's like these superheroes, you know, they get their rubber stamp by this company called VOD. You know, they're all corporate. Like, remember when The Rock was the corporate champ? That's what they are. So, I mean, great series. And, it starts with the guy's girlfriend, you know, being in the wrong place at the wrong time and getting run through in the worst of ways.
Yeah, by their version of Quicksilver. Caesar.
Yeah, and that's when it starts, and he finds out there's this kind of, not underbelly, but the boys mm-hmm. led by Carl Urban, who, if soups get out of line, they take care of them.
You got Billy Butcher, Wee Huey, Mother's Milk, and the Frenchman. Like, great characters, just all the way around. And then the heroes are great, and Starlight. Ooh, ooh.
Yeah, and the show ends with, and it's eight episodes, right?
Yeah, eight.
Yeah, eight episodes. And again, this is not one to watch with the family.
Oh, no. This is a very NC-17.
Adult show.
So. Yeah, and it's got some pretty tricky subject matter, too. So, like,
absolutely.
Like, if you get triggered, and I'm not saying this, like, if you get triggered, but, like, if you get triggered easily by certain things, definitely, like, kind of check out some of the synopsis first before you go and watch this.
Yeah.
All right. My next one is Car Masters, Rust to Riches. They take it's Gotham Garage in L.A. And what they do is they find like hidden gems, fix them up, and then trade them for something else that they can fix up to trade for something else they can fix up and then sell for like a big payday.
I just put this on my list, too.
I love it. Mark, the guy that runs the garage, I think, like, is a really astute businessman as well as one of the most creative people ever. The second season just came out. It's all about them trying to get this car called the XNR. It was a concept car that they only made one of, and they came across the guy who has the mold so that they can, you know, create the body for it, and just kind of the adventure and like this season has a lot of ups and downs. Like, you know, they have some shit go down, and it's really good. And the cars they make are really, really neat and beautiful, and yeah, it's just well worth watching. It's a lot of fun. It's something you can watch with the whole family. The cast of characters are great, and you know, Constance, what can I say? Constance.
Yeah,
you'll know when you see it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking this one out because, like I said, probably 3 days, maybe 4 days ago, I just happened to be flicking through Netflix and that popped up.
Oh, nice.
And I watched kind of, you know, the promo show when you hover over a video or hover over a show.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, yeah, I'm putting that on my list. So
yeah,
I'll end up watching it sometime.
Awesome. All right, what do you got next?
So next is Black Mirror. I've always been a fan of the Twilight Zone back in the day, even the original black and white Twilight mm-hmm. Zone. The other show was Outer Limits.
I was always more Outer Limits than Twilight Zone. But
see, so yeah, with the Twilight Zone, I never watched the old school Outer Limits. but I watched the old school Twilight Zone. But when the Outer Limits came back on, I think it was HBO or Showtime back in 95, in the early mid-90s, that's when I start watching it again. And I it's speaking of Outer Limits, I believe it's on either Hulu. I think it's still on Hulu, or because I was watching it
about a few months ago.
So Black Mirror is that, but with a more, I don't want to say modern take, but a more focused take on the ills of technology and how technology can go awry, or not necessarily technology, but just us living in a technological world and where that will take us, and whether it be from punishment to pleasure. And the show is, again, it's one of those where the last season I was not nearly as enamored with as the first several seasons of it. And it actually moved to Netflix after, was it season 3 or 4? I think it was after season three.
So I think season 4 was the one that had the social media episode with Bryce Dallas Howard.
Okay, yeah.
And that was the first.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite episode?
I don't think I do. And again, there's a lot of those that I've only seen one time. Mm-hmm. One of the ones that sticks out to me, and I don't remember the name of it, but it took place where, and again, this is going back to Westworld with control mm-hmm. versus choice. And it was where these soldiers were, I think it was season 2, if you remember this, correct me if I'm wrong, where they were fighting these monsters. Mm-hmm. And this one soldier ends up having a glitch where he sees what the monsters really are.
Right.
And he has a choice to make. He's not in control of the situation, but he has the choice of road A or road B. And that's the example of Black, and I don't want to give the spoiler away. That's why I kind of got really vague about it. But that's what Black Mirror is about. That choice versus control, the situation and how you handle it, but in a technology bent.
Yeah.
It's great, especially the first few seasons are great. I would recommend that if you're a fan, and it's an anthology series they're loosely connected, but there's an episode or two that connects the series deeper than mm-hmm. what you would see on a normal basis.
Yeah, no, it's really good. My favorite is like one of the people's like least favorite. It's called the Waldo moment. Where it's the cartoon character is running for public office.
Yes. And
I love that.
That was one of the last ones I watched, actually.
Yeah, that was from season 2. And that's my favorite episode of the whole thing. So, all right, cool. All right, so my next one is actually a limited series. It was on HBO called McMillions. And it is the story of corruption and fraud in the McDonald's. It's a docuseries, McDonald's Monopoly game, and about these people who had the ability to steal the winning tickets and would sell them to people for, you know, a couple $100,000 plus half of whatever it was.
That's another one of those on my list. It just seems so just incredibly ridiculous.
It's 100% ridiculous. And the people who were involved, this guy Jerry Jacobson who perpetrated the whole thing was just like he was kind of like Ray Liotta without all the coke in Goodfellas. But, you know, I think the real thing was like the FBI agent who was in charge of all this is a total like bro. Like, I think he watched Point Break like 40 too many times because he just kept wanting to go undercover and go undercover and go undercover. And then, you know, he finally did and he got that chance and he blew the whole thing wide open. But yeah, I mean, it's a true crime documentary, and you know, it's a true crime that's not about murder, which is good. It's produced by Mark Wahlberg's production company, which, you know, is pretty cool.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, I mean, it just came out. It ran from February 3rd to March 9th. Like I said, on HBO, well worth the watch. It's really exciting. If you liked like we watched this before we watched Tiger King. If you like Tiger King, you're definitely going to like this show. So
I correct me if I'm wrong. It might may or may, I think this is on the list of shows that you can watch for free, even if you don't have an HBO subscription.
I don't know. I have an HBO subscription, so I don't have to worry about
because
that. I'm changing the password now that they have that, so you can only watch the free stuff.
So, well, yeah, I was about to say they have like five, like The Wire, Sopranos, and it's like 500 hours of shows.
Yeah, that was almost my list of things to go stream, actually, is the stuff that they have on there that's free to watch.
So yeah, if you don't have HBO, check that out, because I don't know if it runs through April or if it just runs through April, but check it out while you can, and you get a lot of free content.
Yep. All right, what's your last show?
So I did have I had an honorable mention, mm-hmm. and that was Stranger Things. I wanted to put it on there, but like this show that I put ahead of it, and for Stranger Things, I don't need to explain it, but you know, three seasons on Netflix. However, when I was thinking about the shows that just really grabbed me, is and that's Undone. And I've talked about it on the show before. I've talked about it with you before.
And I haven't watched it yet.
It's on Amazon. And anyone has ever watched The Scanner Darkly, it's that type of animation. So it's – and I don't know the name of that animation where people are acting and then you put
– It's just an overlay. It's an animated overlay on their face.
Okay. I didn't know if there was like an actual term for that.
I think there is, but it's just an overlay where they match up the animation to, you know, their faces. So,
okay. So, and it's very surreal. Mm-hmm. Long story short, Rosa Salazar, who plays Alita Battle Angel, which again, I almost put that on my movies list. I didn't.
I had that and I took it off.
So she is, it's very unique in the sense of her, you know, her sister and her mother, you know, our family, because, and she's the older sister. She has, you know, she's deaf, but she does wear an implant or an earpiece. Mm. But it's basically almost, it deals with time travel. It deals with loss as far as she lost her father and reconciling with that and how that affected her. And what would you do if you had the chance to make amends? And again, it can get real trippy at times. It's a pretty quick watch. I can't remember if it's six or seven episodes. I think it's six, but the episode lengths are about, it's similar to I'm Not Okay With This as far as episode lengths. I think these are more consistently in the 25 to 30 minute range.
Yeah.
But it's just, and again, I just love Rosa Salazar in it. I loved her in Alita. She made Alita for me.
Nice.
And it's just one of those shows that, it's a PG-13 type show. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some mature themes, but not necessarily over the top like something like The Boys or The Witcher.
Yeah. Why don't you give your honorable mention?
That's what I said. Stranger Things was my honorable mention.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
Three seasons. That's on Netflix.
Yeah. I've liked Stranger Things more as it's gone on. Like, I definitely don't hate it like I did the first season, but... Yeah,
I just find it funny that I was like, that was one of those things that I'd heard not a peep about. And then I think it dropped on Halloween, the first season.
Yeah.
And I was just home and I just happened to say, hey, what is this show?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those. I didn't read anything about it. I had no idea what it was about. I was like, hey, what's this show? Oh, it takes place in the 80s. Let me check this out. Mm-hmm. So
cool. All right. So my last one, is called Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet. It's actually one of those shows on Apple TV Plus. It stars Rob McElhenney from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and was created by him and Charlie Day and Megan Gans, all who are involved with It's Always Sunny. You know, it's got Danny Pudi on the show from Community. F. Murray Abraham's on the show. David Hornsby, who plays Cricket on It's Always Sunny, is on the show and is great. But the gist of it is it's a story about a video game development studio and Rob McElhenney's character Ian Grimm's ego. is just the only way to put it. And it is completely over the top. It's already been picked up for a second season. So if you have like an Apple device or you have a subscription, like anytime you buy an iPhone or Apple computer, Apple product, they're giving you a free year right now. So it's definitely worth it to check it out. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's 9 episodes. They're all about a half hour long. And it's about this massive MMO called Mythic Quest, and Raven's Banquet is their newest update DLC thing, and the battle between Poppy Lee, who is the game's main, you know, just she's the one who actually makes the game at this point, and Ian comes up with the ideas, just kind of their battle over control of like what's cool in the game, and Poppy is not cool at all. And there's a YouTuber, or I forget what their version of YouTube is called, but his name is Pootie Shoes. And he's like a 12-year-old kid who's like, you know, the decision maker for gaming in the universe of this show. And it's a lot of fun. Like I actually binged through all 9 episodes in like 2.5 days. So it's well worth watching. All right, before we get to movies, I had two kind of, I guess I'll call them honorable mentions. They're two stand-up specials. They're both on Netflix. The first is Bert Kreischer's Hey Big Boy. If you like to laugh and you're irreverent and you don't have a problem with a middle-aged white guy running around without a shirt on, this is the comedy special for you. It is hilarious. Like, I laughed so hard I had a headache. And then the other one is Taylor Tomlinson, Quarter Life Crisis, also on Netflix. She's a 25-year-old comic who is one of my favorite up-and-coming comics right now. She is hilarious. She tells, like, just stories about how she thinks she should be engaged. She got engaged. She's not engaged anymore, and why. And just she's got this very, like, sardonic, sarcastic, like, delivery. And, yeah, she is great, and you should go watch both of those. All right, what's your first movie?
Train to Busan, which it's one of those.
Is this again, zombies?
Yes.
Okay.
Just think about, it's kind of like, for those who are fans of World War Z or 28 Days Later, it's a nice combination of, it's a lot of action, don't get me wrong, but it's also like great character moments. Long and short of it is, you know, again, this is, now granted, this is a subtitled film. It's one of those movies that I'd seen on Netflix. This is where I watched it. I think it's on Amazon now, but I saw it when it was on Netflix. And it might still be on Netflix, by the way.
Okay.
But it was one of those things I didn't realize what it was about until I was looking up movies for zombie movies for mm-hmm. Halloween like 2 years ago. Oh. I was like, oh, that's what this is about. And I ended up watching it. It starts off a little slow to develop the characters, but when it's like when the zombie shit hits the fan, it's so intense. And I likened it to World War Z and 28 Days Later because most zombie movies for me are just like fun in yeah. the sense of, you know, they don't give me, there's no real tension for me at least, but those two movies, Train to Busan as well, there's just so much tension because I actually don't know if the characters are going to make it or not.
Cool. There's stakes.
So well done.
There's yeah. stakes and, in the movie. And not yeah, just the human yeah. variety, like the, like, you know, of things that will happen.
Yeah, and you know, the main character is this father who's trying to, you know, get his daughter out of this just zombie mess in Seoul. And on top of that, just real quick, and the reason I mentioned this is because the trailer for the sequel called Peninsula, which takes place 4 years later, just came out last week. But also on Amazon, there's an animated kind of, I guess you would call it an accompanying piece to Train to Busan. It takes place, it's called Seoul Station on Amazon, and it takes place around the same, it takes place during the movie itself, but you're seeing different characters and what's going on with them. Huh. Again, just like Train to Busan, it's by the same director who is, like I looked up, he does a lot of animated stuff. His name yeah. is Son Yun Ha.
Okay.
On, and but it's I just love that. It's one of my top, by easily one of my top favorite zombie slash horror movies.
Awesome, cool. Thank you for sharing. I think I heard Phil DeFranco talk about this on his show before, and then when that Peninsula trailer came out, he was talking about that as like a thing he likes. All right, so my first movie is actually a movie I haven't watched. I'm going to watch it this weekend. Parasite won Best Picture and Best Foreign Picture and Best Director at this year's Academy Awards. It came out on Hulu yesterday. So, yeah, haven't watched it yet. Watched the preview. Really interested to check this one out. And so I'll report back after I see it. I actually had a different movie in this spot. It was called Honey Boy. The Shia LaBeouf one, the autobiography where he plays his dad. And Lucas Hedges plays him, like the more grown-up version of him. But, yeah, it's a special kind of movie that I don't think is for everybody.
Yeah, that Honey Boy, and that's on my list, as well as Parasite. Because again, yeah. I just saw that. Yeah, last night I just saw that it was on Hulu mm-hmm. now. So,
yep. Speaking of Shia, he had a movie come out called The Peanut Butter Falcon, and I'll talk to you more about that afterwards. But it's okay. Definitely worth watching. It's awesome. It involves like wrestling. So I feel like we've talked about wrestling on this podcast enough this week. So. And if you haven't listened, go listen to my and Julian Brown from Everything is Permitted's review of WrestleMania 36. We talk for a long time. Anyway. All right. What's your next one?
Next one is, you can't have a list without something from the Plus, right?
Right.
Disney Plus. One of my favorite animated movies of any type, you know, animated, you know, Pixar, any of that is Moana. And that's on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm.
Do you see what's happening here?
What's that?
Are you face to face with greatness? Is it strange? You don't even know how you feel.
Yeah, that's yeah.
It's incredible.
And, yeah, The Rock is in it. You know, so, and
I love this movie. Okay. I love Moana. It is, you know, of the like Disney computer animated ones. It's like this and Tangled are up there for me. But yeah, The Rock is great in this one.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I have a soft spot in my heart for this movie and Moana herself is that, you know, I have two nieces that are grown now. Mm-hmm. Good grief. Like one did actually just – one of them graduated from college, and Moana reminds me of her so much. Like it always, you know, gets me emotional thinking about it.
You do have a heart.
Yeah, it's somewhere in here. And just, you know, that determination to do what you know, your society tells you not to do, not just because, but because, you know, you feel it, you feel that in your heart and your soul that, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this chance. It doesn't matter what anybody says. I know I can do it, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it. Yeah. So I just love this. I love this movie. Love it.
Her voice is amazing.
Yes,
just the range and the way she sings and you know, all of that is she's fantastic. This is a great one. And if you haven't seen this movie yet, what rock are you living under, or what shiny shell?
Yeah, like the song, that song, How Far I'll Go, is every time that gets me, man.
Oh yeah,
I just love it.
Awesome. Okay, so my next one is a documentary on HBO. I think you can get the gist about what I've been watching lately. it's called The Scheme. And being a huge basketball fan, like I am, and I know that you are, this is the story of Christian Dawkins. He grew up in Saginaw, Michigan, and his dad was a famous high school player and a coach. And he essentially, as a kid, became the youngest person to land a shoe deal for any team, but it was for an AAU team out of Michigan, with Under Armour. And he just kind of went from there. He became an agent. He was a manager. And he's the one who is responsible for the pay to play stuff with LSU, with Arizona and Sean Miller. And this is a really, really interesting look at how corrupt the NCAA is.
Oh, geez.
It is a horseshit organization. the whole idea of amateurism is a joke at this point. And it is a tax exempt organization as well. So they do not pay taxes. They are technically listed as a nonprofit. Yet they
make I didn't know that part.
The NFL doesn't pay taxes either. I don't know if you knew that or not. But they make billions of dollars a year. And this guy, Christian Dawkins, who is brilliant. He's pulled himself up by the bootstraps. Like when he was graduating high school, he didn't want to go to college. He just wanted to go start a management company. And he wrote his parents this letter about, like, these are all the reasons why I shouldn't go to college and why college is going to hold me back from where I want to be in life. And, you know, he got there and, like, you know, he is by no stretch of the imagination a Boy Scout. Let's just not pretend that. But, you know, he was the patsy for all of this. The FBI entrapped him. It is. If you're at all interested in sports or college sports or things like the Olympics, this is totally worth watching. And I will say, I am so happy Sean Miller is not the coach at the University of Xavier anymore, or Xavier University, because he is a piece of shit.
And I could go on and on about my thoughts about the NCAA and their selective punishments for universities and all the crap they do. It's a garbage institute. Like, the NCAA is garbage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that none of these coaches, who they had audio on saying, oh yeah, just pay him whatever he wants, did not lose their jobs, did not get suspended, did not go to jail. And of, like, the 9 people who end up getting charged with things, Dawkins served a year in jail, and that was the longest term anybody spent. And it is utter bullcrap. It's just he's telling a story about how, like, they seized and froze his accounts and stuff like that. But he had like $90,000 in cash just lying around his house. So he's like, that's what I lived on. It's like, wow. So anyway, yeah, this is one definitely worth checking out. It is amazing. I texted you as soon as I finished it that you needed to watch it.
Yeah, he did.
So
I'm going to check this one out. Absolutely.
Like, honestly, if you had watched that, this episode today would have only been about Westworld in this documentary. So, all right, what's your last movie?
Fighting with My Family. Going back to the wrestling thing.
Dude, you're all about The Rock today.
Yeah, this one's on Hulu and Amazon. Yep. Florence Pugh, which I'm a big fan of hers. Mm-hmm. Like, from this movie, I watched her. I liked her in Midsommar too. Not the movie, not as much.
Okay.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing her in the Black Widow movie.
Yeah.
But it's the true story of, I was going to say.
Well, it's kind of the story of.
I won't say the true story. I'm going to use inspired by. I don't know.
It's a true story, like Fargo's a true story.
I should say that. Yeah.
So, but it's the story of Paige from WWE. Right.
And what's her full name? Do you remember her full name?
Oh, it's whatever mom's ring name was.
But speaking of her mom, Lena Headey played her mom.
And Nick. Oh God, Ed from Shaun of the Dead. Her name is Soraya Jade Bevins.
That's a mouthful. Yeah.
And her dad is Ricky Knight. Her mom is Sweet Soraya. Her brother is Zach Zodiac. And then she has a half brother, Roy Bevins. I love this movie. I actually own this. I bought it before it was streaming anywhere. I've watched it 2 or 3 times. I love Stephen Merchant. This is the first movie he ever directed. So, yeah, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you.
but this is one of those movies I if you look at my series list, most of those are, kind of more of adult fashion.
Yeah.
And I was looking, and this is one of those movies, again, of course, with Moana, that you can watch with the family. Mm-hmm. It's just a great story. Again, I love Florence Pugh. The Rock does make a nice little cameo appearance in there.
I love Vince Vaughn in this movie.
Yeah, Vince Vaughn is really good in this. I recommend this.
I will say The Rock is the reason this movie happened. He has a friendship with Stephen Merchant and was like, hey, you should direct this movie. Stephen Merchant's like, I've never even watched a wrestling match in my life. you know, I'm going to go off and do more Gladys voices now, or more voices in Portal 3. I don't know if Portal 3 is coming out, but that would be great. But anyway, yeah, so I agree. This is a great one, and everybody should watch.
So what's your final one?
Marriage Story on Netflix. Adam Driver, Scarlett Johansson. It's a Noah Baumbach movie. I love Noah Baumbach movies. I almost had a different Noah Baumbach movie on here that was another Adam Driver movie where he it's him and Ben Stiller about they're making documentaries. It's called what is it? Oh, I'm having a brain fart. Oh, it's called While We Were Young or While We're Young. But this Marriage Story is fantastic. Like everybody involved with this got nominated for an Oscar just about. This is the type of movie Netflix should be making, like this caliber of film. Not just the actors, because they've gotten like, you know, that Spencer Confidential movie has Mark Wahlberg and the guy that was M'Baku in Black Panther, and it's fine. It's just got big names. It's a horrible script, but this is just executed so well. You know, it made me like a character Laura Dern was playing, even though I don't typically care for Laura Dern. Yeah, this is a fantastic movie. It's well worth watching. If you're married or in a relationship or have kids or have been divorced, like it's pretty touching to watch how they go through their story of a couple. But yeah, I'm a huge stan for Adam Driver. Like a couple weeks ago, Angel got mad at me because I watched like 4 Adam Driver movies in a row. So, well, because I started where this is where I leave you, or this is where we leave you, or no, this is where I leave you, and then went to The Dead Don't Die, and then watched While We're Young, and then finished out with Logan Lucky. So it's like, you know, I just had a little Adam Driver-a-thon.
Yeah, Marriage Story is definitely one on my list because yeah. I do like Adam Driver, and I absolutely love Scarlett Johansson. I've heard only good things about this movie. Yep. Not just from you, but just mm-hmm. everywhere, and not just from the Oscar people.
Right.
I don't follow that stuff. I have a couple reviewers that I listen to, you know, friends that I trust, mm-hmm. like you, and mm-hmm. that's where I get my opinions on movies that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
I don't listen to critics or anything like that. But
I mean, Randy Newman gives this a great score, and then Robbie Ryan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Robbie Ryan is the cinematographer, and it's just a beautiful looking movie. Like it's much prettier than a movie of this subject matter deserves to be.
Yeah, I was about to say, from the subject matter, that's not what I would think about a movie being beautifully made. This type of movie,
yeah.
Which that would only add to. The list of positives for that for a movie like that.
Yep. I mean, it's like Kramer versus Kramer in some ways, but like,
wow,
not as bad. It, like, you know, I mean, that's the closest thing you can compare it to. So, but yeah.
I'll definitely check that out too. Yeah.
All right. So there we have it. Some good stuff. There's a lot of good stuff to stream right now, and hopefully everybody's staying home. They're staying safe. They're, you know, going out for walks, and when you come home, you can watch, you know, you don't just have to keep watching The Office over and over again. There's other stuff out there. But that being said, Daryl, where can everybody find you online?
Right now, right here.
Right here, just on the Office podcast. So, all right. You can find me at Brian Tudor on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, most of them. And you can find the show at infospodcast.com. We have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/infospodcast. Check it out. There's some cool shirts that you can get for backing us, and you know, stickers and fun things like that. Shout outs. What else? We're on iHeartRadio now to go along with Spotify and Apple Podcast and Google Play and pretty much any podcatching app you can think of. So do us a favor, go on Apple. If you're an iOS user, go and give us a 5-star review if you feel like we've earned it. If not, please don't give us a bad review. But no, if you have a friend who you think would like this and you know, could use some distraction these times, just, you know, share the show with them. Let them know that we're here and you know, we're helping put some distraction in the world and you know, we're almost at an hour and a half. So yeah. Our music is by Michael Henry. You can find more about him at meetmichaelhenry.com. And if you can go support Flying Pork Apparel and buy some of the cool shirts that Brad and Co. have over there, that helps them out a lot. We don't get anything out of that. It's all for them because they're amazing and they make our awesome shirts. So you should check that out. And yeah, so whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whatever it is, and we'll talk to you later. Any last words, Cheryl?
See ya.